This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
UN humanitarian officials say drought conditions are expanding in Somalia, despite rainfall in parts of the country in late November. Widespread crop failure is expected, livestock are threatened, and disease outbreaks are reported.
That's VOA's Jody Kapawa reporting. Details coming up.
Also, the head of Gambia's Independent Electoral Commission has fled to Senegal. And as refugees continue to flow in from Nigeria and the Central African Republic, the humanitarian challenges continue to mount in Cameroon.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story, the head of Gambia's Independent Electoral Commission yesterday fled to Senegal. Aliou Momar Njie reportedly left after receiving threats against him and his team. Troops have occupied the building housing the commission since opposition candidate Adama Barrow won elections last month. After initially accepting defeat, President Yahya Jammeh reversed course and said he will appeal the results to the country's Supreme Court. For more on the events unfolding in The Gambia, we contacted Pandari Mbai. He's the publisher and editor of the online newspaper for The Gambia and the diaspora called Freedom. Reporter William Eagle asked him for the latest news coming out of Banjul.
The exact whereabouts of the electoral chairman, Aliou Momar Njie, remains unknown as we speak, Bill. Based on information we gathered, he's on the run, and he's believed to be residing in Senegal for now.
Have there been other political exiles in recent weeks who have also left the country? Does this look at this point as if it may be a trend, or is it really too early to say?
The situation is chaotic as we speak. It is a cumbersome situation. The political deadlock remains unsettled as we speak. Over the past couple of weeks, there has been a massive crackdown on supporters of the newly incoming government led by Adama Barrow, President-elect Adama Barrow. There is a campaign going on called Gambia Has Decided. Folks who are behind that campaign, they've been arrested. Some are currently on the run. They believe to be in Senegal. Also, this morning, we received information that a Navy officer is also on the run. The country is somehow in complete turmoil, Bill.
You said that a naval officer had left the country. Do we know anything about this man? Why is this important?
Well, he's a senior member of the Navy. He's an important guy. He's a lieutenant. Based on the information we gathered, he's not happy with what is going on. He doesn't want to be used by Jammeh to kill his own fellow countrymen. As such, he decided to leave town.
It's reported that on January 10th, the Supreme Court will meet to hear President Jammeh's appeal of the election results. Some media have said that three judges have come from ECOWAS countries, Nigeria and Sierra Leone. Can you verify that? And what are your thoughts on that? Is it likely that this will take place? Do we know who the judges are? Would they be fair-minded judges, or would they be judges that would be handpicked or selected, perhaps as supporters or allies of Jammeh?
Yes, the judges are mainly from Nigeria and Sierra Leone. They've been handpicked by Jammeh. They are representing ECOWAS. They are not representing the Nigerian government. And for the Supreme Court to sit, they are required to have at least five judges on that bench to decide what will happen on the 10th. They will review the petition. Now, an interesting observation here, Bill. In the absence of the IEC chairman, the Supreme Court might be obliged to enter a default judgment in favor of Yahya Jammeh. And that is going to further polarize the political situation in Gambia. That might render the country ungovernable. So the stakes are very high. Yes, the chairman, the Supreme Court, they've been handpicked by Jammeh. The Chief Justice of the Gambia is a Nigerian who was also handpicked by Jammeh. He's a party stalwart of the ruling party. He's very supportive of the ruling party. So people are saying that he might not be impartial in ensuring that justice is administered these trying times.
Are there other forms of crackdown or repression in the country? For example, how has the Jemme government treated the media?
About three radio stations, other radio stations have been closed down by the government. The government is apparently not happy that these radio stations, they're giving airtime to the opposition. So as a result, Teranga FM, a popular FM station in the Gambia, has been shut down by the government. The Hill station has also been shut down. The Afri radio was also reportedly closed by the government. So the situation is very chaotic. And as you speak, Bill, President Jammeh, as I'm told by my sources, he's planning to host some rebels from southern province of Casamance. They are hosted in some military facilities across the country. There are strong presence of rebels from Casamance. We've been told that rebels from Liberia, Sierra Leone, who participated in the war in those countries, that they are currently in the country, in the Gambia. So Jammeh is trying to use them so that he can force out any military intervention coming from ECOWAS.
Do we have evidence of these rebels? Have they been documented or seen, or is this just allegations?
The information is coming from credible sources, unimpeachable sources. I spoke to a senior security chief in the Gambia last night, and he told me unequivocally that the rebels are here and that they have been hosted by the government. In fact, at the Kanifing PIU base, there are some rebels at the PIU base. They are hosted there.
That was Panzeri Mbai, the publisher and editor of the Gambian online news site Freedom. He was speaking with reporter William Eagle.
Humanitarian challenges continue to mount in Cameroon as refugees continue to flow in from Nigeria and the Central African Republic. The government and the United Nations are concerned about acute food shortages in the year to come. Moki Edwin Kenzeka has the story from Yaoundé.
The number of officially registered refugees in Cameroon has climbed to about 500,000. With fresh arrivals coming from both Nigeria and the Central African Republic. That's in addition to the over 200,000 people registered as internally displaced by the Boko Haram conflict. But Najat Rushdie, coordinator of United Nations aid efforts in Cameroon, says the acute numbers of refugees and displaced people are much higher. Some people are still being registered, while others have sought shelter outside of camps. The UN estimates the total number of refugees and displaced people in Cameroon to be as many as 1.6 million and warns that the number could climb to as high as 2.7 million. But the government and the UN say $310 million is needed over the next 3 years to meet the needs.
La grande inquiétude que nous avons et le grand changement en termes d'évolution.
She says the highest worry is the increasing number of people vulnerable to food insecurity and malnutrition, since more than 2 million people are already exposed to food insecurity. She says on Cameroon's northern border, where Nigerian refugees are found, there have been unpredictable long dry seasons, floods and unfavorable climate conditions that have hurt farmers. She says such factors are having direct impacts on the humanitarian situation of refugees and displaced persons, so they have to look for means to handle it now. Armed groups continue to operate freely in the Central African Republic, in particular in the countryside. Not only do refugees not want to return home, but as many as 20,000 more have arrived in the past 10 months. And Cameroonian authorities have warned that despite recent military successes against Boko Haram, the war against the terrorists is not over. Cameroon's Minister of Territorial Administration, René Emmanuel Sadi, says host populations near the border with Nigeria are abandoning their farms for fear of insurgent attacks. that has aggravated the food crisis.
Nous avons à nouveau pensé mettre en place un plan de réponse.
He says Cameroon is counting on international donors, friendly countries and the UN to execute the emergency response plan it has prepared to take care of both refugees and internally displaced persons. The Boko Haram insurgency, now in its 8th year, has spilled over to Cameroon, Chad and Niger. According to the United Nations, more than 25,000 people have lost their lives and over 2 million have been displaced. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Coming up on 16 minutes past the hour, this is Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. Kenya's Electoral Commission says political wrangling and tension related to biometric voter technology may delay preparations for the country's upcoming elections. From Nairobi, Mohammed Yusuf reports that the opposition is threatening protest over a proposed amendment to Kenya's electoral law.
Kenya's Senate Legal Committee is reviewing public comments about a controversial amendment to the electoral law the lower house passed late last month. The bill will allow manual voting and also allow the commission to manually submit election results in case biometric voter technology fails during the August election. Electoral commissioners said they requested the amendment because they do not want to lock out some voters who may not be identified by the biometric registration kits. Former Council of Governors Chairman Bomet County Governor Isaac Ruto told the Senate Legal Committee the manual system could be manipulated.
Out there, Kenyans just want fairness. They are not interested in tyranny of your numbers inside the houses. The real issue is the voters who don't turn up, and we end up voting for them manually, identifying them manually.
This is not the only Electoral Commission request that has been challenged. A Kenyan court stopped the electoral body from awarding a bid auditing firm, KPMG, to clean the voter register. The court also suspended 25 million tender for printing ballot papers given to a Dubai-based company, saying the bid was marred with irregularities. Electoral Commission Deputy Head Betty Nyabuta says political players are making preparations for the election difficult.
I think we are largely very prepared for this election. I really don't see any huge challenge. The huge challenge would basically be out there with the external players. They need to give us that operational space for us as a commission to do our work.
Political commentators Martin Andati warns any quick fixes to the electoral process may result in post-election violence.
If you are doing amendments haphazardly the way we are doing, we are bound to have problems during the voting time. So that will cause a problem. And if we don't have a credible and accepted election, then we are bound to have chaos.
The electoral body plans a mass voter registration from January 16th to February 14th. The registration activities may be affected by opposition plans to start street protests if the Senate passes the electoral law amendments. The Senate is to meet Thursday to debate the amendments and vote on the recommendations from the Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
UN humanitarian officials say drought conditions are expanding in Somalia despite rainfall in parts of the country in late November. Widespread crop failure is expected, livestock are threatened, and disease outbreaks are reported. VOA's Jody Kapawa has the story.
Nature has not been kind to Somalia in recent years. Drought, coupled with conflict, led to the displacement of more than 1 million people within the country. Another million or so Somalis are refugees in neighboring countries and Yemen. But many people who have not been uprooted are also in need of humanitarian assistance. Justin Brady is head of office for Somalia for OCHA, the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs. He says following the Gu rainy season last July, a new estimate was released on the number of people in need of aid.
The assessment done by the Food Security and Nutrition Analysis Unit that is managed by the Food and Agricultural Organization put the number at just over 5 million. That's a new threshold for us to pass that we haven't seen since the end of the famine in 2012. Of those, 1.1 million are estimated to be in crisis and emergency. And again, that's a new threshold for us to pass and a very worrying one.
Of the 5 million needing assistance, he says, 4 million are in what's called the stress category.
Our main concern now is that of the 4 million or so that are in stress, that's a category where people are really on the margin and could easily fall into worse conditions, that they won't just fall into emergency, but they will skip over emergency and go straight into crisis if the conditions don't improve.
Brady says the expanding drought in Somalia is a complex problem.
The situation of drought in Somalia is multi-tiered. We've had drought conditions in the north of the country for about 5 to 6 successive seasons with on and off rains. We're now seeing those conditions spreading to the south of the country. But of course, the coping mechanisms in the different areas of the country are quite different. So it isn't simply to say there's been less rain in one area and therefore it's worse off. We need to look at the particular vulnerabilities of those populations.
And it's affecting how much people have to eat.
In the north, the crops are not necessarily the most important part of the equation. For them, it's livestock, and livestock have been devastated by the lack of pasture and water to the point where when I had a meeting with the president and vice president of Somaliland, the ministers that were there said, we need to forget about the animals. We need to start just saving people's lives. Down south, in the past season that ended sort of in July, we saw about 30% to 50% reduction in food production in what is the breadbasket of Somalia in the cereal region.
Brady says as people become malnourished, they are more susceptible to disease. There's been an increase in cases of measles, acute watery diarrhea, and cholera. Drought conditions in Somalia are blamed in part on the recent El Nino weather event, which warms ocean temperatures in some regions. Then there's concern over a La Nina weather event, which is a cooling of ocean temperatures. Brady says, whatever the cause, the problem's getting worse.
I'm not a meteorologist. I just see the results on the ground. This past season, the deer season, which should have been October through December, has underperformed considerably. And so we're seeing a place like Somaliland, which had made some improvements in the rainy season earlier in the year. Those gains have all evaporated very quickly, and people are really starting to fall into crisis and emergency.
Conflict has been present in Somalia for many years. African Union and Somali government forces continue to battle al-Shabaab militants. But conflict does not always occur in drought-stricken areas. However, when it does, things can get bad fast.
To date, it hasn't been significant because the drought has had the most profound effect in the north, where we don't have necessarily those profound conflicts. We do have some clan and some disputes between Somaliland and Puntland over two disputed regions of Sol and Sanaag. But as we see the drought creep south, this is going to become a major factor. And as we saw in 2011, the lack of access for humanitarian actors had a devastating effect on the vulnerable populations. And we saw a huge amount of displacement.
The drought that began in mid-2011 struck East Africa very hard. But in Somalia, the UN declared a famine in two southern regions where many thousands of people died. Conflict prevented humanitarian aid from reaching those in need. Last March, OCHA announced a drought relief plan for northern Somalia. However, only about half the funding needed to implement the plan has been received. Humanitarian agencies say the plan for this year would provide urgent life-saving aid to nearly 4 million people. It will cost $864 million to fully implement. OCHA's Justin Brady says the recent political gains in the country have not yet benefited the average Somali. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
An outbreak of typhoid in Zimbabwe's capital has killed 2 people and is affecting more than 100 others. The outbreak is raising fears the southern African country's water and sanitation problems are far from over. Sebastian Mofu has more from Harare.
Officials say that so far, 126 cases of typhoid have been confirmed since the start of the rainy season in Zimbabwe about 2 months ago. There are more than 1,000 other suspected cases nationwide. But Dr. Prosper Chonzi, who heads the Harare Health Department, says there's no need to panic.
What we are doing is to educate the public on awareness issues to do with typhoid, what it is, how it is spread, how do you avoid getting it. We also discourage people from consuming food from undesignated premises. So far, in terms of water and sanitation, our city of Harare teams are in Bare de-blocking the sewer pipes, making sure that there is no free-flowing sewer. They are also dedicating supplies of water to those areas.
A visit to the areas he referred to and other parts of Harare on Wednesday tells a different story. Forces are dry and sewer water could be seen flowing while some people were using water from open sources like lakes and rivers. The executive director of Community Working Group on Health, Itairu CK, says President Robert Mugabe's government did not learn much from the 2008-2009 rainy season when an outbreak of cholera claimed more than 4,000 lives in Zimbabwe.
The fundamental public health issues that were supposed to have been attended to from the earlier crises have not yet been attended to. Authorities are taking advantage of the outdated Public Health Act that we are currently using, enacted way back in 1924. And public health trends have changed. This is why you find it is easier for city of Harare to pollute our water body and pay the fine, a very small fine.
The pollution he refers to is raw sewer water discharging into rivers, which some people rely on for daily use. Those using the contaminated river can easily contract waterborne diseases such as typhoid and cholera. Typhoid, an infectious bacterial fever, can be treated with antibiotics but still kills more than 220,000 people worldwide each year. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
A French court postponed the corruption trial of Teodoro Nguema Obiang just 2 days after opening the case against the son of Africa's longest-serving president. Obiang, who's also Equatorial Guinea's second vice president, is accused of spending millions of dollars of state funds to support a lavish lifestyle abroad. French prosecutors brought charges against Obiang after a 5-year investigation and a lawsuit by two watchdog organizations. His attorney argues that Obiang needs more time to prepare his defense. Obiang, who did not appear in court, says he is innocent of the charges. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Stay tuned for Straight Talk Africa with Shaka Sali coming up at 18:30 UTC. I'm Yehiz Wuhibi in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Rob McLean, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello Africa, this is James Barty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5 and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
VOA News. VOA.
When news breaks, VOA News is there. Around the clock, listen to VOA Newscast at the top of each hour, along with our detailed news programs and analysis.
We are online at voanews.com.
VOA, your trusted source of news and information.